Hey guys, welcome to a new episode of Saw Something Scary. Derek Zhu, Jeff Wright, back in the studio with you here today. Jeff, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
I'm doing okay. In theory, I am aggravated that the mowers are here.
Yeah,
and I feel like at this point we need to do an experiment where we record the episode at 2:30 a.m. and just see if the mowers show up.
Yeah. It's uncanny that every time we decide to record a podcast, the mowers just randomly show up.
Every stinking time. Yeah. It's uncanny.
Yeah. A little behind the music for you. Jeff and I have actually been on this Skype call for about an hour, just kind of catching up with each other. And I was hoping that maybe prolonging that would would get the mowers out of there, but I guess not.
I think they've just been hovering outside my window. Waiting for, you know, I guess they're listening in. Maybe the NSA is helping them, waiting for you to say, "Hey man, how you doing?" And they're like, "Now's the time to mow the postage stamp in directly behind Jeff's office window."
Maybe they're just big fans of the show.
Well, it's an odd way to express it. Riggers.
They just enjoy listening to the back and forth banter.
Yeah. No, you know, all kidding aside, we have a great company that does, that takes care of our lawn, but man, the timing, it's like driving through Atlanta. If you come through Atlanta, you know, 2 days after the zombie outbreak and it's Christmas morning, you're still going to get stuck in traffic. There's just certain realities in life you can't get away from.
Right. Death, taxes, Atlanta traffic.
And the mower showing up when I hit record.
Yes, absolutely. But that's okay. By now, you should be used to that background ambiance. So we'll press on. Today, we're talking about, in my opinion, John Carpenter's greatest work.
I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to go jump in front of a mower like this is a Shyamalan movie. That's why they're here.
Oh, man. I've been trying to work on that all week, so I didn't crack, and I still crack.
That's really funny.
Spoiler alert, but it is who cares? It is one of my favorite things that John Carpenter did. It's definitely not the best thing he's ever done, but we're taking a look back at the 1993 Showtime movie Body Bags. And I am very excited to talk to you about that. But before we do, Jeff Wright, I hear an old friend is around to tell us some good news.
Yes, we have brought back the Horror Reporter. So we want to do that right now?
Yeah, bring him in.
This week's Horror Reporter.
All right, man. I'm just going to say that maybe we are getting some signs of normalcy kind of poking its head up out of the ground like a gopher on the prairie, or maybe that's a prairie dog. I'm not really sure about small mammals and their roles in various ecosystems.
Right.
Just looking around to see if they can, you know, if normalcy can come back. And that's not a commentary on strategy about states opening. Please don't anybody associate me with commenting about that publicly. I'm just saying that maybe there's some signs normalcy is coming back. And that's it. But it may be a sign that some normalcy is coming back, that we're starting to get some pretty decent news about upcoming projects and stuff Hollywood and the horror genre are working on. Mm-hmm. And in this dark season of time having no meaning, I'm thankful for it.
Yeah.
So let's start in probably the piece of news that means more to me than it does to you. Okay.
Okay.
But I just want to invite you to share my joy. So Blumhouse is partnering with Issa Lopez, who created Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Uh-huh.
And if y'all remember us talking about that movie, I'm like one more viewing away from turning my Twitter account into a Issa Lopez stan account. They're going to work together. Blumhouse and Lopez are going to work together to create a film called Our Lady of Tears. Okay. And let me read you the premise. I had no idea about this bit of news. This is all courtesy of Bloody Disgusting and John Squires. So apparently there was a mass hysteria epidemic in 2007, which spread through, and forgive my accent, Villa de las Niñas, which was an all-girl Catholic boarding school on the outskirts of Mexico City. And it apparently, whatever this epidemic was, there are rumors that supernatural visitations were taking place and also miracles. And so Lopez is going to take that story into the horror genre with Blumhouse. And having seen what she's done with the Latino community with Tigers Are Not Afraid, knowing that Blumhouse will give her a solid set of resources to work with. I'm not saying they're giving her, you know, summer popcorn blockbuster budget, but just that they will back her and work with her. I am super excited about this film. Does that sound interesting to you the way it does me?
Yeah, man, absolutely. I'm all for brave new directors trying to, you know, apply their craft to broader horizons.
Yeah.
And I'm really thankful that you turned me on to that movie. Because I definitely wouldn't have watched it had you not said anything about it. And so if this lady is going to bring that kind of energy and that kind of brilliance, for lack of a better word, to this, then yeah, dude, I'm all for it. Let's make a date and let's watch that bad boy.
I think for people who might want to get a jump on this, I haven't read it yet, but people who might want to get a jump on this, if that premise sounded interesting to you, there is a major write-up of what happened there in 2007 that Vox published just yesterday as we're recording this, May 20th, 2020. So it's called The Haunting of Girlstown. It's written by Daniel Hernandez, and it's on Vox.com. And it's a really interesting looking article. It's one of those things that they do a pretty good job of, like, replicating a creative magazine outlet on the website. Excuse me, magazine layout on the website. And so if anybody wants to jump on that, I will try to drop that in the old Facebook group.
Yeah, or please do. Actually,
Google
just
can find it too. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually just looked it up. So I'm excited to read this after we get done with the recording here.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to slot that news under just all good news. I'm a huge Tigers Are Not Afraid fan, and so I probably haven't felt as enthusiastic about a new director since Jordan Peele the way that I feel about Lopez. So I'm over the moon. You tell me if it's fair that I feel kind of a mixed bag sense on this next bit of news, okay?
Okay.
Good news. Jamie Lee Curtis moving behind the camera with Blumhouse for a horror movie. Good news, right? Okay. The rest of the headline is about climate change.
Didn't they do that with The Happening?
That's exactly what I thought too. And here's the thing. Climate change is a deeply political subject. Yet again, the Saw Something Scary position will be no public position.
Right.
I think we can all be very public, though, that the last time this was attempted in a substantial way, it didn't go so well.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. I'm very willing to believe that Curtis can do it better than Shyamalan. I'm also going to work on the premise that past outcomes and past performance is the best indicator of future performance. And I'm just leery. It does seem like climate change can be, like, you can make a pretty cool action movie from the premise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you can do horror. I just don't know.
Yeah.
So the title?
Yeah, go ahead.
The title is Mother Nature. Curtis is also writing this. I don't sense good things. My Jedi senses are not tingling in a positive way.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll tell you this. In Jamie, we trust. And so I'm going to be cautiously optimistic about this until I see a trailer that tells me otherwise.
Okay. You know, I would like to join you. But when I know the title is Mother Nature, I don't know, man. Maybe this should be renamed The Horror Cynic.
Nah, man. It's all good.
Am I right to call it a mixed bag here?
Yeah, no, 100%.
Or should I just say Jamie can do it and Jamie we trust and this is good news?
Well, here's the deal. Just like you said, all the beginning of that is incredibly great to hear. Like, I want to see a movie directed by Jamie Lee Curtis. The woman has, you know, decades of experience in front of the camera, and I think that she would be an amazing director and an amazing writer. I think that all of those things are good, but and I'm just basing it on, you know, the fact that we saw The Happening. When you're dealing with stuff like this, and of course, right now with the world being, you know, torn apart by political bias, maybe it's not the right time to do it. But also, if you know, I don't know Jamie Lee Curtis personally. If this is something that's near and dear to her heart, then maybe she's going to put a lot more into it than M. Night did. And also maybe she will see the era of M. Night's ways and not go down those same paths.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is that Jamie Lee Curtis is insanely more talented than M. Night Shyamalan. And I'll again remain cautiously optimistic, but if it's anything like The Happening, then of course you know I'm out.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Although we do get one incredible line of dialogue from The Happening. I'll tell you, there's some bad news on this front. We're not going to spend time in this one in this segment on this one, but Michael Bay has also been tapped by a Paramount executive to work on a pandemic thriller, quote, in the spirit of Paranormal Activity and Cloverfield, called Songbird, that takes place in a world where the coronavirus is still going on.
Yeah, 2 years from now.
There's nothing about that I want to see come into existence. I don't want Michael Bay working on horror. I don't want to think about a world where the pandemic is ongoing. I just want to stay away from every bit of this. And in fact, you know, the same article I read this in indicated that there will be no supernatural elements. And so I'm not entirely sure how this is in the spirit of Paranormal Activity in Cloverfield, but what ifs? Just don't make the movie.
it's going to be found footage.
Ah, that's it. Of course, sir. Well,
you know, I that's mere speculation.
That's exactly what it is. So, yes, that really what we need in this dark hour is Michael Bay making a found footage film about the worst possible outcome of our current circumstances.
Yes.
I'll take Asian murder hornets over this.
Yeah. I'll take things I never needed in my life for 400, Alex.
Who in the world thought that was a good idea? How does nobody in Michael Bay, Paramount, or basically the industry just not throw their body in front of that?
Yeah. I honest to God, I don't know. I read that last night and just wanted to smack my head against the wall.
Yeah, or smack some Paramount executive's head against the wall.
Yeah, well, you know, they're not as easily accessible as my own head. But yes, if between the two options, I would rather do that than harm myself. But my goodness, man, nothing about that makes sense to me.
Are you expecting us to believe that you can't summon Hollywood executives to your abode for a reckoning? I mean, Derek, you've done that three times just since we last recorded.
I mean, you're not wrong. I'm not really good with Paramount, though. I'm good with like Universal and Warner and the Paramount, and we're not on speaking terms at the moment.
Gotcha.
So here's the thing. I guess we should have seen this coming, because when I'm like just going through my mental Rolodex, was it like a year after 9/11 where we had the first United 93 movie?
That sounds right. I can't confirm off the top of my head, but that sounds right.
Yeah, and you know, and then you had a few years after that, you had the Robert Pattinson romantic movie where he winds up dying at 9/11. I say all that to say that Hollywood does not waste time in exploiting the tragedies of the world.
That's very true. Depressingly so.
And so, I guess it's one thing when like, for those of us outside of 9/11, we live that for what, like a week. You know, it's one thing to do it like that, but we're still living this, like this pandemic. You know, things are starting to open back up, and you know, and states are starting to, you know, resume business and stuff. But man, we're still in the thick of this thing, and it just feels really stupid to do a movie about something that we're all living in right now and have it be the worst possible timeline when I feel like that 2020 is the worst possible timeline. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's the worst kind of exploitation.
Yeah.
I feel you.
If we were behind this, you know, like if somehow we had found a miracle cure and everything was like everything had come back to some sort of normalcy and we were good, then yeah, sure. You know, if you want to poke fun at it or do a heightened version of it. But dude, this is the heightened version of it.
Yeah.
Like I feel like it's death and dumb of them to do something like this so soon. And especially, no offense to Michael Bay, but especially with Michael Bay.
Absolutely. I mean, you've walked through in degrees of importance what the deal is. Like the exploitation factor is the big one. Michael Bay found footage. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's just weird.
There's nothing good here. Yeah. I get it. So we've spent more time on that than I intended to. I don't want to turn this into like, hey, guess what? There's more awful stuff coming.
Right.
Speaking of which, with it being the worst timeline, as we're recording, we're like 9 days away from it becoming the sixth month of the year. And I still don't feel like the year has really started.
Yeah.
So maybe two good news, maybe two more mixed bag news. A mythical beast has appeared in Hollywood.
The Yeti?
Almost.
Okay.
Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League is coming to HBO Max in 2021 for whatever reason.
You know, because a toxic fandom has been beating their chest and yelling for it for the last 3 years. That's why.
Yeah, I don't want to kill those guys for wanting to cut. I get that. I'm even thankful that, like, well, I mean, let's just kind of frame things out. Your overall appreciation for Zack Snyder as a comic book movie creator, how would you describe yours?
Meh.
Yeah. I think I'm even more cynical. I thought Watchmen was really good, and I thought Watchmen ruined him.
Yeah.
Because he can't see anything in comic books except Watchmen. So I'm not one of these guys who've been thinking that Zack Snyder's cut of Justice League was going to be this transcendent film that fixed everything. Like, Snyder is the guy who had Batman shooting guns. He had the stupid Martha moment. I mean, Zack Snyder has a track record, and I've noticed it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I am happy for fans who really wanted to see this cut of the film. You know, yeah. I'm just happy to see people get what they want.
Sure.
And even as a guy who is very skeptical of Snyder, I'm happy even for myself in that, like, I'm going to watch this thing. I didn't hate the original cut, or rather the cut that we got of Justice League. But I'll go back and watch this, and I'm basically going to win either way, because I'm going to come back and be like, oh no, Snyder really did do a better version. That's the one that should have come out.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to have the definitive proof to be like, see, Snyder still sucks. It's crystal clear. We now have no reason to not just sort of put a stamp on his legacy as a comic book movie creator and move on from it.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm playing with house money on this front.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good point. I guess for me, it'll be nice to go back and see Batfleck some more. And apparently, you know, there's some rumor and innuendo about some more Superman stuff and things. I'm genuinely curious about it. But I also, to the point of, like, had this never come out, I'd have been like, oh, well, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it would be no skin off my back either. I do think it'll be nice to not have... You know, for people who, I mean, I'm one of these people who engage online in comic book and comic book movie discussion. It'll be nice to just have the urban legend captured. Like, until we actually see this thing, everybody's able to project their hopes of its excellence onto the film with no repercussions. They can just assume it's incredible because there's no actual reality for them to evaluate.
Yeah.
And so one way or the other, we're going to get the conversation moving forward. It's not going to be trapped in the, oh, if only Zach could release his version.
Sure.
And to your point, the for all the problems I think Snyder has, it's not with casting. I would maybe quibble just a little bit with Ezra Miller as the Flash. Mm-hmm. But everybody else I've been super happy about. So it will be nice to see these specific people as these characters again.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I actually went back on sometime last weekend, I guess it was, and watched Aquaman.
Yeah.
Just to see if I'd have a different opinion on it than I did the last time I saw it.
I like that movie, and it's weird too, because Amber Heard's in it, you know.
Yeah,
things have changed with her in some sense, maybe. And I don't know. It's just a strange time capsule. But I had a good time on that movie. I'm not invested in that character, so I had a good time on the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I described it to a friend of mine. She said, "I've never seen Aquaman before," and I said, "Oh, well, it's basically 2.5 hours of Jason Momoa being charming and attractive." And she said, "Oh, well, then sign me up."
Yeah, I was going to say, there's an audience for that. There's an audience for that.
I said, and then on the flip side of it, so that the guys aren't, you know, insanely jealous of the fact that they're not Jason Momoa, you have Amber Heard there.
But, you know, I liked Mira in that. I really did. I don't want to comment beyond that, but, like, the scene where she makes all the wine bottles come alive, I thought was super cool. And, yeah. And I also laughed at, again, hacky, but when she ate the flower, I was like, that's funny. It's funny to watch a super A-list, you know, at the time anyway, actress eat a flower, you know, straight with a straight face. So,
yeah. Yeah, there's some really fun moments in that. I think that Patrick Wilson seems like he has the most fun in that movie.
Oh yeah, I mean it's the most lunatic. It's the most it's the oddest combination of caliber of actor and role, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just glad he went for it. I'm glad he went as over the top as he possibly could.
Yeah. Speaking of Amber Heard, I read an article. I think from our sister podcast, Ramblings from Nowhere, where Johnny Depp is being looked at to play the Joker in the Matt Reeves Batman movie.
You're a bigger Depp fan than I am, but I have no objections.
You know, as somebody who said 12 years ago, man, I wish Johnny Depp was playing the Joker. I'm excited about it. But I don't know, man. I'm just... It'll just depend on which Johnny Depp shows up for it. And what I mean by that is, will it be the Johnny Depp that was the extraordinary actor that played Ed Wood or played Captain Jack Sparrow? Or is it going to be the overblown Tim Burton hanger-on that did the Mad Hatter and that did the Lone Ranger? You know what I mean?
Like, you just sent a cold chill down my spine.
If he brings his A game, he may not be as good as he once was, but for one night he can be as good as he's ever been. If he can bring that fastball back for one more shot, I think it'll be great, because I think that Johnny Depp is truly one of the most enigmatic and charismatic actors of this generation, and has always had success playing weird characters, right? Edward Scissorhands, again, Jack Sparrow, Ed Wood, even, you know, more downplayed situations like Gilbert Grape. Depp he has this aura about him that he could pull the Joker off. But if it's hey, Johnny, here's carte blanche, do whatever you want to, then it's gonna suck.
Well, Frigg, I guess I now see much more clearly how it could go sideways.
I don't want it to be, though. I want it to be. I want Johnny to be Johnny.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things where it's like, hey, buddy, you're not the biggest movie star in the world anymore. You know, Pirates of the Caribbean isn't a hot franchise anymore. So let's put a governor on you. Let's give you some. Let's Shyamalan you, right? Let's give you some restrictions and. You go back to being the character actor Johnny Depp that is amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rooting for that too, and I think it takes a special kind of actor to have the chutzpah to take on the Joker after the kind of performances we've seen associated with it, starting really with Jack Nicholson. And Johnny is in that category. It's just that there is the Leto Joker. He's in the same kind of category of an actor with chutzpah. It just tells you that this can be a tire fire in a dumpster. That's a possibility as well. And so, yeah, you're bringing me back to the ground a little bit on this. While you were talking, something clicked in my brain, though. I'm going to run it by you just off the cuff as a hypothesis. We've talked on here before, and even the comics have kind of explored that one of the reasons the Joker works so well is that he can be multiple different characters within the context of being the Joker. Like, he can be the super crazy guy. He can be the guy who's barely hanging on. He can also be the mastermind. And all of those have shown up in the comics. I don't think this will ever happen, but would you be pumped? I think I would be. I would be pumped, and I wonder if you would be, to see Downey play a gangster mastermind version of the Joker as a guy who has this veneer of being in complete control, again, criminal mastermind, but then, like, we get a couple glimpses of how dark it really is under the surface throughout the movie. Because that's the version of the Joker we've not really seen on screen. Nicholson was the closest.
Yeah. And you're asking if I would want Robert Downey Jr. to do that?
Yeah, yeah. Would you be as excited for that take on the Joker with him as I would be?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I think that they tried to play that a little bit with Black Mask in the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it, so.
Yeah, and Ewan McGregor does a really good job of pretty much playing exactly what you just said. But I mean, yeah, you know me. If it's got Robert Downey Jr. in it, sign me up. I don't care. You know, I watch Doolittle for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these are simplistic concepts, but I can see Downey behind the desk in the paint.
Yeah,
kind of running stuff.
Yeah,
but at some point, somebody says something wrong, and he just starts beating on them, and he doesn't stop till everybody leaves everybody leaves the room because he's not going to stop.
Yeah.
Or at some point we see him come out of a room, and in the murk we can see there are people chained to the walls. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
this guy's got it all together, but it's a veneer, and Lord help us if it ever cracks.
Yeah. I think I'd rather see Johnny Depp do that though.
Than Robert
Downey Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because I think that obviously Downey's my favorite actor, but I don't think if you put Downey in a superhero movie, everybody's just going to be like, what's Iron Man doing in the superhero movie?
See, you've really got to the core. What I'm basically looking for is dark Tony Stark as the Joker.
Sure.
Because Stark is this guy who's got it all together and is the smartest guy in the room, but the daddy issues and alcoholism, like it's all right there and it could go wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just flip that all the way across the moral spectrum. And I think I'd love to watch that. I guess it seems for me that Depp is more flamboyant
mm-hmm.
in his mannerisms than Downey is. And I think Downey could do I'm trying to convince you all I've got it under control.
Yeah.
In a way that I just don't think Depp will be interested in. Depp's going to want to play this thing to the tens, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, Johnny does a good job of being put together and stuff. Did you ever see Public Enemies?
I don't think I did. Is that a gangster movie?
Yeah, it's a gangster movie. He plays John Dillinger, and Christian Bale plays Nervous Purvis.
Dude, I'm writing that down right now. I love gangster movies. I don't know why I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I don't know if amazing is the right word, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. And it's a movie that I'll revisit, you know, once in a blue moon when I get like the gangster itch. But I think that if you watch him in that as John Dillinger, you'll be like, oh, that's a side of Johnny Depp I didn't realize was still around.
Yeah. Okay.
And of course, this was right before or maybe right after he had done the first Alice in Wonderland. But you know, things just seem to get more and more progressively crazy after that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you watch that or if you watch Donnie Brasco, I think Donnie Brasco would even be a better synopsis of the character that you're thinking of, you know, like, hey, I'm trying to keep it together. But if you say that one wrong word, I'm going to prank you to death with this tire iron.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah, maybe we'll get that.
But yeah, if they do decide to go with Johnny Depp, I think it'll placate a 15-year craving that I've had to see Johnny Depp play the Joker.
Hmm.
And if they don't, then that's fine too, because at this point, I mean, my God, do we need another Joker in another movie?
It is a fine question. We're going to get, I mean, I guess that's really the depressing reality. We're going to get it, so we need to be rooting for the best possible version.
Right.
And, you know, assuming we have normal lifespans, I'm assuming we'll be back in this situation again.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for the Joker coming back, you know, in maybe 10 years or something, but it just, I don't know, man. You know, we went almost 20 in between seeing Jokers in a movie with Jack and Heath. And then, you know, we went, what, 7 or 8 between Heath and Leto. And then it was, what, 3 between Leto and Joaquin Phoenix. It just, to a point, you're going to see law of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
And the Batman character has such an amazing gallery of villains that I just feel like you could use other people and let the Joker cool off for a while.
That's a fair point. I'm just going to say this is a depressing reminder about the state of Hollywood. They just don't know. They don't know how to take something that hasn't worked in the biggest fashion multiple times and make something new. You know, it's a rinse and repeat age in Hollywood. And that just makes me think the law of diminishing returns is going to be the gap between new Joker movies rather than, rather than any hope of them saying, you know, one of the great things about Batman is he has this incredible cast of rogues. Can somebody make the Penguin interesting again? Can somebody make the Riddler or Mr. Zazz or somebody like that, you know, interesting?
Yeah. And with all due respect to Jim Carrey, you know, the Riddler should be one of the greatest foes Batman's ever faced on screen. And, you know, there hasn't been a really good job of it done. The Batman TV or the Gotham TV show, paints a good picture of the Riddler, but and the actor who plays him does a really good job. But as far as like a movie goes, I just feel like that. I mean, we could wax nerdy about this all day long. I just feel like that the Riddler has been misused and miscast.
And neglected.
And neglected for sure. And, you know, unfortunately, we lost the best, in my opinion, the best actor that could have played the Penguin when we lost Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, dude, that's a perfect call. Perfect call.
But, I think Colin Farrell, I think, is playing him in this Matt Reeves movie.
Really? Well, whatever. I mean, at least they're trying.
Yeah.
I feel better about that attempt than other elements of that movie.
Yeah.
All right.
So we'll see. Man, what a melancholy horror reporter.
It is. Maybe we should have just left it in the mothballs for a while longer.
I guess so, man. My goodness.
All right, man. Well, let's put a wrap on it.
This has been this week's
So that means, are you ready to pull the curtain on body bags?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Yeah, man, pull the string. Let's do this thing.
Well, let me just start with gushing. I love this.
Yeah.
I was delighted by this. This is just what I needed to like snap me out of a run of movies I have not been impressed or happy with.
So I took some notes while I watched it, and the first note I put was, man, early 90s campy horror was exactly what I needed this week.
Yeah, yeah. And honestly, you're right that this is campy 90s horror. I just kind of, it felt 80s-ish to me, which I guess makes sense because it's Carpenter and Tobe Hooper.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, this is exactly the remedy I needed for my horror malaise. Totally yes. Agree with that.
Yeah. And I agree with, I originally, it's funny you said that I originally had written early or 80s horror, but I remember that this was in 93. So I changed it to early 90s. But yeah, man, I mean, just that in that generational vacuum of, you know, 80s, 90s campy stuff. And I, looking back on it now, I'm kind of sad that they didn't, you know, because Showtime commissioned this to be a series.
Yeah.
And it was going to be an anthology series like Tales from the Crypt or something like that. And so they shot this with Carpenter, and then Showtime realized they didn't want to do it. And I'm kind of sad that they didn't go through with it, because I think this would have been fun to watch, you know, for a few seasons.
Yeah, so I'm with you entirely. There's a couple things there. You know, I was watching it, and so I didn't read anything about this movie before we went into it, because it's one of the few Carpenter movies I've not seen. I just wanted to enjoy that, because I that's an experience I'm just not going to get to have very much more.
Sure.
Like, oh, this is Carpenter I've not seen. So I wanted to go in totally fresh. I didn't know anything about even the context of the film. And I just had a blast watching him go through this, and I thought, oh man, they are really, this is the Crypt Keeper as, you know, not a puppet.
Yeah.
Which of these came first? And so one of the things, having then come back and kind of filled in my understanding of the historical context, was I'm kind of amazed how shamefacedly they just did the Crypt Keeper thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, I get that Tales from the Crypt was huge for HBO at that time. I get that Showtime would want to get in on that action. But I was surprised how blatantly they were doing it as they were kind of prepping this potential series. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But dude, I straight up love John Carpenter as whatever this character. What would you call him? The orderly or the
Coroner?
The coroner.
That's his official title.
Yeah, I've heard Carpenter say that he stopped casting himself in his films because he's not a good actor. But this version of him, I don't know if he could do this week in and week out. You know, maybe he wouldn't have committed to that. Maybe he couldn't have mustered the energy every week. But dude, I thought this was basically his best performance in front of the camera. And it's, I don't know of a second. I don't know of what comes in second.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither do I. It's crazy, man. Like, I wish that I could have like a, you know, it's one of those time machine moments, right? Where you wish you could go back and talk to the people that were in charge of this and be like, so do you expect John Carpenter to sign on to do like a 20 episode season of this? Do you expect to have as many cameos in this every week as you did, you know, for these three episodes? Was it only going to be a 30 minute serial? You know, or 45 minute, I guess, where you have the coroner come in and, you know, intro, outro, and then the movie, because I think every one of these are roughly around 30 minutes long. So there's just a lot of questions that I have for it, because as a standalone, I think it's great. But do you really think that you could do 12 more of these? You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the great question. And that may be what got them to pull the plug. I mean, I read that they wanted to move the series to Canada, and it was a budget call. And that's when Carpenter and I guess Tobe Hooper were like, no, we're good. Thanks. We're out.
Yeah.
Which, if I'm a studio executive, knowing that I'm dealing with John Carpenter and Tobe Hooper, which particularly Hooper wasn't, you know, he wasn't throwing heat in the early 90s.
Hey, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah.
Is it Tobe or Toby?
I've always heard Tobe. I say that. I've always assumed it's Tobe. I know I've heard it said 1,000 times. Maybe it's Toby.
You want to vote on it? Sure.
Okay. You vote for Toby?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go with Toby. So Tobe Hooper wasn't throwing heat in the 90s. So maybe they thought they could kind of jerk him around more. But Carpenter has never been that guy who's like, sure, I'll move my whole life to Canada. You know, he had Halloween money in his back pocket. I'm sure They Live has continued to generate revenue for him. His music is another source of income. I'm not saying the guy's rolling in it, but there's no version of John Carpenter I've ever read about that would move to Canada for a serial. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And maybe they could have had him do the, what'd you call him? He's not the morgue keeper.
The coroner.
Maybe he could have done that at an LA soundstage and they could have edited it together, you know, in post. But if he's going to have to direct, I don't see him moving to Canada. So yeah. I would have assumed whatever executive had that idea as a way to kill the series, not as a way to potentially continue the series.
Hmm.
You know, it gives plausible deniability. Oh, yeah, we were going to keep doing it. We had to move it for budget reasons and they opted out. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say you're probably that could be the solution to the problem. Did you know that the writers of this wrote the goat? I was trying to combine two different TV shows. Wrote the Goosebumps TV series.
Oh no, I did not. Yeah.
So maybe that's another reason why they were trying to move it to Canada, because I'm pretty sure those guys are Canadian.
Yeah, sure. Get it close to the writer so they can, you know, adjust things more quickly on the fly. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, either way, I don't know if the series could have maintained this degree of quality, but man, I'm here for the three we got. And honestly, just to keep singing Carpenter's praises one more time, what year did Beetlejuice come out?
89.
Okay. So I think he's clearly inspired by that performance.
He is. Yeah.
I read somebody call him white trash Beetlejuice in a review. And I wish I had written that down, because somebody deserves credit for that. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually, I listened to an interview with Carpenter about Body Bags yesterday, and Carpenter said, I tried my hardest not to be Beetlejuice. He goes, he goes, the cadence and the way he goes, that's how it felt. He goes, but I was trying my hardest not to be like a poor man's version of Beetlejuice.
Man, I thought cable TV Beetlejuice worked really well.
Yeah, I thought he did great.
Yeah,
you know, it's the one thing that is, I guess, been branded in my memory. It's the whole reason we're doing this. So a few weeks ago, something triggered a memory, and it triggered the memory of him being on the corner table, and he looks up into the camera and says, "Head saw." And that was the only thing I could remember about the movie. But I just remember being like, man, I remember that there was a dead body who brought in these, you know, these little mini episodes in this horror movie. And I can't remember what it was. And so I did a bunch of Google searches and stuff. I had no idea that John Carpenter was even in it. I just remember it was something that I watched as a kid. Mm. And that last thing where he looks up at the camera and goes, head saw, was just, it just burned into my head. And so when I finally figured out what it was, I went back and watched the trailer for it. And I was like, oh, man, we've got to do this for the show. So if anything, White Trash Beetlejuice is the entire reason that we're reviewing this today.
Well, I'm thankful. I'm thankful that he did it, and I'm thankful you saw this and remembered it, because, I mean, for a lot of different reasons, I needed a win, and as you know, in my entertainment life, and this was a total win.
Yeah.
So could we do this? Maybe could we rank the shorts in terms of quality?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead.
Which one did you think was worst? Let's go worst to best.
I think the worst one of the three was Hair.
I'm in complete agreement. I think it was an interesting premise, but it was too thin to be a whole. They just stretched it out too thin.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I thought that the story was fine. And I even like going into that black comedy, camp, I was fine with it, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, there wasn't enough meat on the bone, I think, to suffice a 30-minute, short on it. I did enjoy Deborah Herring. I think that's her name. From Blondie being the nurse.
Yeah, as the nurse. Yeah, right. And yeah. Sheena Easton was the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Hey, I tell you what, let's do this. Let's get the ranking done, and then we'll just get into each one of those, because I want to talk to you about Hair, and I'm realizing we'll end up, you know, giving away the storehouse on that. So Hair number three for you.
Yeah.
I'll let you take the lead again. Which one was number two?
Man, you know, that is tough.
Yeah.
But I think I'm going to have to say The Eye for me was number two. And then The Gas Station would be number one. And it's a toss up, because I think that The Eye has the best overall performance in the anthology. But I really enjoyed that, like, again, that Halloween feel that The Gas Station had.
Dude, we, without having ever talked about our experience of this movie before we hit record, we've had the exact same relationship with this film.
Good.
So let's go back to Hair real quick, and we'll just talk about him in the order you laid out. So I thought Hair probably had people having more fun in their roles, mm-hmm. right? He's a that guy actor for me, but the guy with the hair. Do you remember his name?
Give me just a second. His name is Stacy Keach.
So Stacy Keach was having a good time. Clearly the nurse was having a good time. I'm sure Sheena Easton was really glad to be, you know, working with John Carpenter in this potential, you know, this thing that may have had a lot of eyeballs on it, right?
Right.
So they're probably having the best time as a cast. I just felt like...
No pun intended.
That's true. What I said earlier is what I think just kills this thing. Like, it's a pretty interesting idea, but I can only have him go back and forth to the barber shop and complain about losing his hair so much before I'm like, yeah, we're in rinse and repeat territory again. No pun intended.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and also... forgive me for this, but the special effects on this reminded me of Event Horizon.
Oh, how dare you?
It did, though.
How dare you?
Those little snakes becoming, you know, the hair becoming snakes. I was like, oh, this is the sequel to Event Horizon.
Oh, my gosh. Let's just cut this off right here. You know, that maybe as much as anything made me think this was 80s rather than 90s horror.
Yeah.
I thought by the time we got to... When you have the close up of the snake coming out of one of the holes in the guy's face, which, mm-hmm. by the way, as a dude who has that weird phobia about holes and things, mm-hmm. that was unsettling. Sure. I thought the like little full blown snake creature version was fairly okay for cable TV in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. But when we first see the hair moving and it's like inchworming across the sink or whatever, mm-hmm. I was like, guys, y'all should just left this out. Just make it wriggle. You know?
Yeah.
Like, don't do this.
I think the reason that this one also comes in as the worst for me is because there's really no good conclusion to it. You know, he just sits in a chair and I guess he dies, and then you're back in the mortuary, or you're back in the coroner's office.
Yeah.
Or am I wrong? Is there something else in there?
No, that's it. He's just gone to be a basically a petri dish or a feeding source for these little snake monsters.
Yeah.
Which it wasn't really explained, you know, for all the time they spent on, is he at the hairdresser or is he not? Is he angsty about his losing his hair or is he fighting with his girlfriend about losing his hair?
Yeah.
I never really got how these little dinky worms could then run or present themselves as the doctor and the nurse. Like, are they a bunch of worms basically under a trench coat? In a man suit and a woman suit, or do they take over somebody's brain, or do they? I mean, because like if he is a guy who's going through the process, nobody's coming to him for medical treatment just based on his appearance,
right?
That little device, I didn't really understand.
Yeah, I didn't either. Were they human? Were they alien? Were they familiars? Like, yeah, I don't know. It felt like that they had a good premise, but they didn't know how to. They didn't know how to get it all the way to completion.
Yeah.
Just.
Well, this is a Carpenter directed bit. And clearly, as you've already alluded to, it's the one at the gas station is shades of Halloween.
Yeah.
I really did, not knowing that this was Carpenter directing here, I really did feel like this is the depressing ending of Roddy Piper in They Live.
Yeah.
He's uncovered an alien conspiracy. It's taken over people. It's replacing people. And he becomes a victim rather than being all out of chewing gum.
Yeah. I never thought about that. If I didn't know that John Carpenter had directed this, do you know who I would have thought directed it?
Wes Craven?
Sam Raimi.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. This I didn't think about that, but that's spot on. This is very much in his wheelhouse. Well,
especially with him making that cameo in the gas station.
Right, which is why I went with Wes Craven. Yeah.
Yeah. Raimi just off the – like, this is the – you know, this is the continuation of the Evil Dead, like camp and.
You know, honestly, sorry, I cut you off. I got eager with the point you're making. I'll wait. Sorry, sir.
That was it. Just the campiness and craziness reminds me of the Evil Dead trilogy. That was all I was trying to say.
Sure. Well, it also it maybe more specifically makes me think of Drag Me to Hell, which is a movie I don't really care for.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
But it's campy. It's over the top. And there's also this like morality issue. Right. So like in Drag Me to Hell, the woman is sort of sideways adjacent mean to the old woman and her life falls apart. This guy is sideways adjacent to vanity and he's literally eaten alive by it, you know?
Yeah, that's a really great call. I had completely forgotten about Drag Me to Hell.
That's the right approach to that movie.
Yeah, it really is.
If you're ever going to watch, listener, if you're ever going to watch Drag Me to Hell and you hadn't seen it and you're going to watch it, just turn it off when she buys the kitten. That you'll have seen all you need to see about that movie. And you still may have a chance of like, why do the guys on Saw Something Scary hate this movie so bad? Well, I think we've wrung out hair. It is interesting, though, that I was supposed to believe that What's-His-Face wanted to look like Teen Wolf. You know, when he picked his new hair, he's like,
yeah. Dude, that was – yeah. I mean, and maybe it's just because, you know, again, when you look back to the late 80s, early 90s, that was the fashion, you know. All the heavy metal rock band guys had the big hair and long hair. And, of course, you know, Fabio at the time was touted as the most attractive man in the world and stuff. But, when they were going through the demos, I was like, oh, that would look pretty good on the guy. No, I want that hair. And I was like, really? You want to – you want to look like never mind.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Teen Wolf. That was the Teen Wolf model. I did think it was really funny. I thought the montage of him looking at people with luxurious hair was really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really glad they went for it with the shot of like the Shetland dog or whatever it's called,
you know,
that he's even envious of this long-haired dog. I just thought that was really funny.
And kudos to Keach for being able to be in a position to make fun of himself. I don't know what his hair situation is now, but when he opens the door and his hair is literally painted on, it was a laugh out loud moment for me.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure how much your NBA fandom extends, but when he did that, I was like, oh, this is LeBron James living his personal hell.
LeBron's got that Wu-Tang hairline.
I, you know, there was an NBA player named Carlos Boozer who played a game, was sprayed on hair.
Did he really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's funny.
That's worth a Google. And it's ironic because Carlos Boozer was a guy who had like chest hair bursting out of his uniform. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But
it had all dropped south of his chin. And yeah. Anyway, he played a game sprayed on. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the best place to end the hair conversation.
Let's put a pin in that and get on to the eye.
Talk about Carlos Boozer's taco meat.
Chest hair. I'm on the record only talking about his chest hair. Just want to note.
So, all right. Yeah. The eye. Home run performance by Mark Campbell.
No pun intended.
Yeah.
So it took me a minute to realize the reason I recognize this guy is because it's Mark Campbell. I'm kind of ashamed to say that, but when he's talking to the coach, like, you're really hitting the heck out of the ball, I'm like, oh, that dude, where's that guy from? I'm like the biggest Star Wars fan I know. And it just took me a minute. I don't know what happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he's a little younger there, a little thinner. We're used to seeing older Luke Skywalker. So,
yeah, maybe that's it.
It makes sense.
You know, I really love this story. I usually don't go for body horror, and it makes sense to me that Tobe Hooper would. You know, when he gets a chance at it. But this little short really worked for me.
Yeah, I really did think it was good. I think the reason, I mean, the gas station is really, really good. The one thing that I wish wasn't in this, and I think it's probably the one thing I wish wasn't in the entire movie, is the sex scene that goes really rapey.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty rough.
I just remember being like, oh, man, that, you know, we just had a guy turn into a werewolf in the last one. Mm-hmm. And now we're going real opposite sides of the spectrum on this one. But yeah, besides that, I thought it was great. I do have a question for you on both those, actually, with hair and with the eye. There was a lot more talk of like God and prayer and the Bible than I would have expected in a horror movie. And I guess just to the point where like that stuff just isn't really talked about much in movies in general, unless it's the bad side of it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What'd you think about that? Because it seems like, you know, like I said, now those things are more of a taboo, you know, unless it's, you know, this church is haunted by alien ghosts.
Get the magic Christmas ornament that carries the blood of Christ.
Yeah, it just seemed, I don't know, they were just freely, you know, Keach was praying to God that his hair was, you know, would grow, and Hamill's reading the Bible, and there was just a lot more faith talk in this than I guess that I expected. It caught me off guard, if I'm being honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. So there's two answers to that, and I'm actually glad you brought that up, because I can't ever tell if it's just my vocational relationship to religion, or if it's actually something that stands out as interesting when I run across something like faith in film, you know what I mean? Unless it's The Conjuring, obviously The Conjuring is built on that stuff, but
sure.
So I'm glad you brought that up. It kind of helps me calibrate a little bit. And yes, I did notice it. So I'm going to take maybe a more serious and then just a narrative answer to the question. I think the more serious, you know, disparity here that you're picking up on is that it is not in 93. It's not as common for basically evangelical Christianity. And I'm using evangelical broadly because it's a broad term. It may have been stretched so far as to be useless. I mean, in the media, it basically has become a synonym for Trump voter. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so the term really doesn't have a ton of value anymore, but I understand the central tenet of evangelical Christianity to believe that the Bible is the perfect word of God. Okay. So that's what I'm using, because Mark Hamill's character clearly has a long, and his wife as well, has a deep committed relationship with the Bible. And that tends to be a mark of evangelicalism in popular media. Mm-hmm. So I think Keach praying indicates that we're not used to evangelicals or people praying to God, a Judeo-Christian God, to not have sinister overtones. You know what I mean? To, like, in 93, it could still be just a goofy, self-centered act. Whereas now we're kind of used to religion being a setup for mental illness. And I'm not saying that as a complaint, because we live with crazy religious people in the news all the time. This is not me, like, special pleading for my tribe. I'm just saying that we've had, Kevin Smith had that movie about crazy religious people who were Christian fundamentalists. There's been another one too. It was called like The Prophet. You see it in the movie that you and I both love with Matthew McConaughey and,
Frailty.
Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't remember that. Like, I think that's sort of the more common motif to see this stuff. We're there. We could just laugh about this dude finding religion because he's so vain. He needs his hair back. Mm-hmm. So that probably helps it stand out. The other narrative issue is that it's just a really great way to set up. It's a great narrative framing to have the payoff be if your eye offends you, cut it out.
Yeah.
And I thought Tobe Hooper did really, really well on that. I mean, I honestly think we tend to associate evangelical Christianity with the South, and Tobe Hooper is obviously deeply influenced by Southern culture in his horror. And I thought it worked pretty well as a framing device.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It did, though. It just kind of caught me off guard because you just don't.
No, you don't see that.
You don't see it used in a positive connotation anymore. So that was nice.
Yeah. You definitely don't see like a wife who's dealing with a guy going crazy being like, could you read your Bible and try to get a handle on this through your faith? You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Which I'm not someone who says you can pray problems away necessarily. I think they're, you know, mental illness that needs to be treated medically is a thing that exists. But like you just said, we're just not used to seeing anything like this in 2020.
Yeah.
Or at least I'm not. I watch a lot of horror and I'm not used to seeing it.
Right.
This short also made me really regret that we didn't get more from Mark Hamill as an actor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all know he's a great voice actor and he's obviously Luke Skywalker, but that feels like we've either got him off camera or we have him in Star Wars and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it comes to the fact of like, once you're Luke Skywalker, it's hard for people to see Luke Skywalker. You know, it's the same thing that we were talking about earlier with Downey playing a different superhero character, right? Like, mm-hmm. What's Iron Man doing in this Batman movie? It's the same thing there. You know, I even at one point, through this, I guess when I realized that it was Mark Hamill, I just remember like, what's Luke Skywalker doing slumming in this Showtime movie? But when you think about it, Mark Hamill's career really wasn't going anywhere at that time.
Yep.
And so I'm sure that if they called him in and said, hey, Mark, we got this thing for you at Showtime, he's like, yeah, I'll take it. Let's do it.
Yep. He found another career in voice acting, but I bet by this time he's probably, you know, I've never heard him talk about this, but he's probably getting to the point of saying, what am I going to do in Hollywood?
Yeah. Yeah. And while Star Wars was popular back then, it wasn't the phenomenon, in my opinion, it wasn't the cultural phenomenon that it's turned out to be.
No, that I think that's right on. You know, there was a guy named Timothy Zahn who wrote a series of novels, the Thrawn trilogy, mm-hmm. and it basically brought Star Wars back as a money making machine. But I don't even know what kind of residuals Luke gets off. Oh my gosh, Hamill gets off of that. You know what I mean?
His name is Luke. Yeah, yeah. I honestly don't know either. Because I don't know what royalties were back in the '70s. You know, mm-hmm. Again, if we're talking about back end deals and things like that, you know, a back end deal on I think it was Civil War is what made Robert Downey Jr. so much money. But I don't know if they would do, you know, if they did that back then or not.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, 93 was a good year for Mark Hamill because that was the year that Batman the Animated Series came out. I believe 92 or 93, one or the other. And
gosh, really?
As you said, really kind of created a renaissance for him.
Yeah. You know, that's such an interesting comparison. Because for me, Body Bags, I really enjoyed because it seemed like a throwback to stuff that had come before, you know, 80s horror. And Batman the Animated Series at the time felt like this is what animation will be forever. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. I'm watching an evolutionary leap in this cartoon. It's interesting that Hamill is in both. And for me, I'm going to say that Body Bags is an enjoyable look to the past. And Batman the Animated Series is a bold step into the future, and it's happening in the same year, and an actor is involved in both of them.
Yeah. Yeah. So Batman the Animated Series came out in 92.
Wow.
Yeah. So this was, you know, this was a big couple of years for him.
Yeah. And he got a chance to be back in front of the camera. I really do wish we'd gotten more of that.
Yeah, I do too.
I mean, he plays this big. You know, he's not going for an understated performance, but I also thought it was really compelling. And I thought he did a good job of being like Midwestern good dude suffers a mental breakdown, you know?
Yeah.
This piece is also where we get the actual real scary stuff in my mind from this whole series. You've already talked about the rapey scene, which I think like get to the bite quicker and
yeah,
let's not have as much choking and whatnot. And we still get the same effect.
I couldn't have went my entire life without seeing Luke Skywalker's butt.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Twin moons over Tatooine. I know it's suns. I know it's suns, guys. I just went for the low hanging fruit. No pun intended.
Man, I don't know if you could ever have as many double entendres as you just did. Congrats, sir. I'm not even mad. That's amazing.
The kid aims to please.
Yeah. Bat and balls. I mean, it's all the same.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Baseball
okay.
player. I mean, we've got so many. Go ahead.
Also, the lady, excuse me, I think I got real loud there. The lady coming out of the shallow grave, I thought was like a legit scare.
Yeah.
I didn't soil my office chair watching it, but it got, you know, pretty scary.
Yeah. It was a good one for sure. Did you expect it to go the way that it did? Did you expect him to sacrifice himself instead of his unborn child and wife?
I guess I didn't know what they would do because I think my chronological idea is sort of messed up here. But we have since seen sort of the idea that the serial killer body part can corrupt the organ recipient. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was tired when this short was taking place, but it's become a tired trope.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get a sense of what this earlier version of that story would look like. I will tell you that the young lady playing the wife really tugged at my heartstrings. And again, I don't know if this is my personal experience bleeding over or if it's just she did as good a job as I think. But, you know, I've lived now with my wife through several different pregnancies. And I just thought, how horrific would it be to be bringing your first child into the world and watching your husband slide off the edge of sanity and become an actual threat to you?
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty poignant.
Yeah, it was very well done. I agree with you on what you said. I did not like that lady playing the wife, though. There was just something about her acting that I wasn't. It felt like you've got a Shakespearean actor acting with a community theater actor. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I don't think you're wrong. Just to try to play the horror uncle here, it may be because they just need her to be a victim, right? Like her.
Yeah.
All she's got to work with is be the object of his craziness.
Well, as I'm reading her bio here, it says that she was a top model. So, uh-huh. I mean, it could just be that, I mean, she has acting credits and stuff, but it could just be where it was like, hey, she's a pretty face.
Yeah.
We need a pretty face for this role. We don't really care. Excuse me. We're spending all of our money on Mark Hamill, so we don't really care who we get for it. Just give us whoever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's as reasonable an explanation as possible. And again, I know for sure that my own experience as a husband is coloring my perception, you know.
Sure. I mean, I agree with what you're saying, and I think that's obviously the tone that they're trying to take with the story. But it just for me, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Acting is such an important part of my life that it's difficult for me to watch bad actors. You know,
yeah.
They'd be like, oh, okay, that seems like you could have got somebody better for that. But
oh, dude. Fine. That's Twiggy. I had no idea that's Twiggy. So I'd followed after you. She was a huge deal as a model.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's got to be. I mean, she was the Michael Jordan of modeling in the 60s. And clearly by the 80s, she's looking for another phase of her career.
Yeah. Another revenue stream.
Yep. Yep. Dang. I didn't even recognize her.
Yeah.
She's iconic as a model, but. Yeah, as an actress, probably not quite in the iconic category.
Yeah, but she has a lot of credits to her name, so good for her. But it looks like that Miss Twiggy, she apparently has a show called Tea with Twiggy on something.
Mm. She was a Warhol. I don't want to say creation. Like, she was a muse for Warhol.
I got you.
And I mean, yeah, in the 60s, she was an it girl, man. But I think the runway was more her native home than front of the camera. Although, you know, I probably appreciated this performance more than you do.
Yeah.
If I'm right about the Warhol thing. Anyway, anything else to say on the eye?
No, I thought that out of everyone in this anthology series, Mark Hamill gave the best performance. Yeah. And it was, you know, like you said, it was good to see him in front of the camera again. And and also in front of the camera, not with a lightsaber.
For sure.
So. So, yeah, man, let's get to the goods. Let's go to the gas station.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I would love the gas station as much as I do if it weren't set in, you know, Haddonfield or Haddonfield adjacent. But
yeah,
that put it over the top for me, man.
Yeah. When I heard that, at the beginning of it, where the two girls are in the car and they said something about Haddonfield, I was like, oh, well, I don't even have to worry about Jeff liking this. Yep. he's on board. And I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed the cameos in this thing. I mean, this is the cameo heavy one, right?
Mm-hmm. It's got to be what they thought would be the foundation stone for the whole series.
Yeah.
Carpenter's directing it. It's got all the cameos. It's connected to Halloween. This is the one I would have led with if I was trying to launch a series on Showtime.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, it blew my mind how much Wes Craven looked like a paler Louis C.K.
Looked like or acted like?
Oh, stop it. Both. But he does. Like, he walks up to the counter, and I looked at him for a second, and I was like, is that Louis C.K.? And then I went, oh, no, that's Wes Craven.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I could be the only person in the world that thought that, but
I can see it. I think I was caught up on just the drunk creeper, you know, and I was like, mm-hmm. Wes Craven's pretty good at being a drunk creep.
Yeah.
You know, like he makes me uncomfortable for this young lady. And that's fairly well done.
Yeah. I love the subtle hint where she goes into the other part of the gas station and knocks a picture over. And when she sets it back up, you realize that Bill isn't who we thought he was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really well done.
Yeah. It's Sam Raimi who played the drunk, right?
Sam Raimi plays Dead Bill.
Isn't that the guy who's like, I want to get in the bathroom. Can you give me the key?
No. No, Dead Bill is the – so when the lady goes to the gas station, when she gets in there first, she's introduced to a guy named Bill, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Bill gives her the keys and everything, gives her a phone number, and then he leaves. Well, then when she goes to find the other key in the other part of the gas station, she knocks a picture over, and when she sets it back up, it's Employee of the Month, and on his shirt is Bill, and it's Sam Raimi.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So when she opens the locker and finds the body, that's Sam Raimi.
That's Sam Raimi. Of course, he's a more slender guy. Of course.
Yeah.
And he would have been, he's got a baby face anyway. He would have looked like a young gas station worker then too.
Yeah, the stranger was a fellow by the name of George Buck Flower.
Not as familiar with George Buck Flower.
George was in They Live. He was the drifter.
Yeah.
And he was also, I guess his biggest claim to fame was he was the bum in Back to the Future.
Yeah, okay. So he's a carpenter. He's a carpenter regular. He's part of the carpenter family. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I popped big for David Naughton.
What made you excited for David Naughton?
I just like American Werewolf in London.
Gotcha. We should review that sometime then.
We should. Yeah, I'd love to.
Yeah, that's an underrated werewolf. I mean, I say not underrated. It's you don't get a lot of conversation about werewolf movies nowadays.
And right.
That one, that's probably the best of the species.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, you know, David Naughton plays the lead in that. So it took me a minute. I was like, man, I know that guy. Where do I know that guy from? And then going to look at his IMDb page, I was like, yep, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, and maybe we slot that in for a Patreon special at some point.
Yeah, I'd love to.
What about David Carradine, man? Did you like Revenge of the Nerds when you were a kid?
I watched them. I watched them, but I don't think I really got them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think, you know, me being a few years ahead of you, I watched all these on like edited for television, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I could tell what... I didn't know, like, 80s boobs comedy as a genre.
Yeah.
But I could tell that there was some like more adult stuff for me as a kid, you know, from my kid perspective, happening in these movies. And I guess probably the unfamiliarity of that kind of led me back to Revenge of the Nerds. I bet you I watched those. I don't know. I watched those movies every time I knew they were on the USA Network.
Okay.
And so I guess Lewis was a bigger deal for me because it was the first time I was watching a comedy that wasn't, you know, built around Fred Savage or the Transformers. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, did you say Robert or David Carradine?
I'm not sure which one I said. It's Robert, okay. Right?
Yeah, it is. It's Robert.
Yeah. I may have said David, but it's Robert. So anyway, I thought he did a pretty good psycho killer.
Yeah, I thought he was great. You know, he's he's the gas station attendant when you first meet him, and he seems like a really cool guy. Well, maybe not cool guy, but he seems like a really nice guy and very helpful and stuff. And then the next thing you know, he's the killer. And I kind of wish that we could have spent more time with them than we did, but. But I thought it was good. The only thing was the final girl was the dumbest final girl I think I've ever seen. She kept like trying to knock him out and stuff, and then she would run away for a few minutes and then look. That was the only problem I had with it. But I thought he did a great job.
Well, you know, I had said that the cast of Hair probably had the most fun, but I'm betting Carradine. I'm assuming he had the most fun because he gets to do all the classic like slasher stuff. He even gets the Michael Myers sit up moment. And I couldn't be more happy or impressed. There's nothing I would really change about this sketch. Maybe your point about her being a dumb final girl is, maybe it should be eligible for that. But set in the town of Haddonfield, you've already got the best final girl ever. Maybe the town would have a dumb, or at least dumb by comparison, final girl. You know?
Yeah.
I even like that idea. Like, I think, I don't know who I'm going to do this with, but at some point in my life, Lord willing, I will be able to show a Halloween movie marathon, and I will just chronologically slot this little skit in as we watch through the various Halloweens.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. I did see a blooper or a goof, whatever you want to call it, that I thought was pretty cool that I wanted to point out. When he falls, Robert Carradine, when he falls after she hits him in the head when she hits him in the head.
In the gas station, not the service side?
Yes. Yeah, yes. Okay. In the original gas station part. When he falls, you can see his blade on his machete bend.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm going to go back and look at that right now. Oh, sorry. As soon as we get done recording.
And I was like, oh, look at that. It's fake.
Yeah.
But the story was really good. The acting was solid. The cameos were a lot of fun. You couldn't have picked a better one to start out with. And if it was going to turn into like an hour long serial where you do one episode or like you do one short per episode, that would have been the one to start off with for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I guess the only thing left then is that final kind of outro where we find out he's the corpse.
Yeah.
The Tom Arnold reveal. I know Tom Arnold is not a beloved figure. Maybe he never was, but, you know, in context, I was like, Tom Arnold, cool. Let's, you know, bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, oh, look at there. Tom Arnold with Hooper. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. I felt like that ending segment went on a little bit longer. Like we could have trimmed like 20% of it and it would still been just as effective.
Yeah.
Where he's looking at them when they get a saw he's looking at them while they pull the liver out. But it's a small quibble.
yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It was another thing that reminded me of how far we've come with effects
for sure.
And stuff, because none of that stuff looked like it was real.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and nowadays it looks like you're actually killing people. And back then, I'm sure it did, you know, to us in that moment as well. But look at, you know, you see what's 20, was that 27 years ago?
Uh-huh.
90th, good Lord. Yeah, so, you know, 27 years ago, the difference that it makes. But yeah,
Eric, what's three decades for people who live seven decades?
Yeah, it's true. That's true. Time is a concept. I loved all those little in-betweens, you know, but I guess, for me, I knew that he was going to be the coroner. Did you, or the dead body, did you expect it or did you just think he was a weirdo?
Yeah, I think it caught me a little by surprise. Like, he's clearly, there's something off about him, and it's not just his personality. Like, he's obviously in ghoul makeup. So I knew something was coming. I guess I didn't anticipate that he was a dead guy. And so when he takes the orderly outfit off or coroner outfit off, I just thought, funny. That's a funny payoff.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear from listeners. I'd love to know if it, if it's a surprise to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I would too. So, all right, man. Well, I think we've wrung out as much as we can about body bags. So let's get to it. On a scale of 1 to 10, where would you rank this?
Oh, man, I'm probably too enthusiastic about this, but this was a 7 for me, and I could be pulled towards giving another half point.
Yeah.
In context, well, it's hard for me to be objective, I guess, is what I'm going to say. I love Carpenter stuff. I was ready for just this sort of 80s throwback where it's quick hitters. There's a little gore, but not too much. It's hitting all the beats I like from slasher movies or whatever genre they're playing with. We've been in this run of seeing a bunch of movies I just didn't care for. Mm-hmm. And anyway, this just landed in every conceivable way for me. So 7.
Man, I would agree with you. 7, 7.5. Yeah. I thought it was for everything you said. You know, we we needed a win, but it hit at the exact time that I needed it to. I thought that it was fun how they went different genres in the horror genre. You know, I guess sub-genres would be the word to say, with the straight up like slasher for the gas station, hair being like this pseudo black comedy.
Sci-fi,
and then with the eye being a psychological thriller. I just thought that they handled all three of them really well, and it was fun to see all of the cameos and stuff that was in it. So, yeah, I couldn't recommend this movie more, especially if you're a fan of that era of horror, like horror movies. And some people aren't, but if you are, and you, especially if you're a fan of Carpenter and things like that, I think this is a movie that you should go out of your way to try to see.
I could not agree more, my friend. This is a must watch. And, you know, it's probably going to be the case that a bunch of people are like, how did you guys not see this? But I didn't.
Yeah. Neither did I. Did we see something scary?
Yeah, man. I think the girl coming out of the shallow grave was enough for me to say yes. Mark Hamill with glass sticking out of his eye was enough to give me the willies. Yes. I felt like the young lady at the gas station was in legit danger. So, yes, yes, yes. I don't know if the young lady was more in danger from Wes Craven's or from Carradine, but she was in danger. So, yes.
Yeah, I agree. There were I don't think there were like certain jump scares, but there were definitely times where I was like, I felt uneasy. And the lady popping out of the grave, I think, was the biggest one. Yeah. So, for sure. So, you heard about what we thought about it. Now, you tell us what you thought about it. Go to the Facebook group We Saw Something Scary and let us know what your thoughts on body bags is. We would definitely love to hear from you, hear your theories, hear what you agree with from Jeff and I, or what you don't agree with, all that stuff. So head over to the Facebook group We Saw Something Scary and let us know. And then while you're out and about in the interwebs, do us a favor and hit those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. Of course, remember that we're everywhere you want to get your podcast from. So wherever there is a rating ability or ranking ability, put us at the top so that more people can find out about who we are and what we do. And then, of course, if you want to partner up with us, we would love to have you at patreon.com/scarypodcast. 4 different tiers for you to choose from. And if you go to the $3 or more, you'll get our bonus episode each month. And we'll be putting that out within the next week. So be on the lookout for that, Patreon peeps. And we thank you guys for your support. He's at Right Jeff. I'm at Derek Zoo. And we are out of time. Do we start Paranormal Activity next week? What are we doing next week? The Lodge?
It's either the Lodge or Paranormal Activity. We probably, I guess, should knock the Lodge out, then get to PA.
Yeah. So, and by the way, before we go, if you have Amazon Prime, you can watch this movie for free. If you don't, it is all over YouTube.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
So, literally like dozens and dozens of free ones on YouTube. So there's no reason for you not to watch Body Bags.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to say.
Yep.
But if you want to watch The Lodge before we review it for next week, you can go to Hulu and it's on there. So really looking forward to talking to you about that one, but I may actually rewatch it just so I'm pretty up to date on it. Until next time, we will see you guys back here next week. Remember to be sorry, I was about to say remember to be afraid of. Be afraid of clowns and sewers, white people with teacups, and blind men with turkey basters. We will see you guys back here next week. Thanks for listening. Bye bye, man.